Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop,
we've got music, TV, movies, and Broadway.
That's right. Reviews of new music from Michelle and Deo Cello and Sade, and reactions to Ava DuVernay's big budget offering, A Wrinkle in Time.
All of that plus my review of Jessica Jones Season 2 and the best new show on Broadway.
Plus, the Big Cell returns right now on Inside Pop. Hey, y'all, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are your weekly dive inside the world of popular culture.
And there is so much culture that is popular right now, Sean.
Thank the Lord. Listen, I love our deep dive into movie season leading up to the Oscars, but it is such a pleasant experience to delve into the diversity of pop culture that is TV, music, Broadway, and movies. And we've got it all in this episode.
Yes, we do. Starting with the number two, but not by very much, film in the country, A Wrinkle in Time, directed by our hopeful friend, Ava DuVernay.
We are trying. We're
trying so hard. Ava, you know we love you. And I got a chance to see it on Saturday night. And I think it is visually spectacular. There's so many. It's just so vivid, colorful. They shot in New Zealand. Really amazing imagery. The costuming is so unique and so different with Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling. Zach Galifianakis is in this. Chris Pine. I mean, the cast is great. Storm Reid, the young girl who's the star. What an incredible talent for such a young age. I feel like we'll see some more really incredible things from her in the future. I hope so. And, it's a film that Disney is pushing really, really hard. It is still a film that is made for a young audience. And I kind of felt that while I watched it. I think maybe a lot of people and critics expected a lot from Ava from her previous offerings like Queen Sugar and Selma and 13th. And which are definitely deeper, meatier type of content. But this is a fantasy. It is a fantasy, young fantasy film. And so I feel like there's got to be a little bit of a step back taken and maybe just try to not expect something extremely deep, which I tried to go in watching this as I did.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that, listen, I can't even, you know, talk about this movie or think about the movie without thinking and talking about the fact that it comes in the wake of Black Panther, which has become more than a movie. It's a phenomenon, right? There's voter registration drives now happening at Black Panther screenings.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah. So they're both released by Disney. They're both both movies are created by two of the most well-known Black directors who come with high expectations. So I think that having Black Panther do so phenomenally, both in terms of box office, critical adoration, and public expectation, there was no way for A Wrinkle in Time to rise to that level. And I do feel like in some ways Black Panther may have hurt. It raised expectations for what a film that's all about diversity and inclusion can do. Mm-hmm. And I think they are two very... I mean, Black Panther just hit a moment in the zeitgeist that we needed, whereas I think A Wrinkle in Time might have fared better if it wasn't 4 weeks after Black Panther.
I think it still fared well. I don't want to take away from its box office. It was $33 million, I believe. That's still fantastic for a first week. And it's going to make the $100 million budget that it had, for sure. I think there's just the same... I think it benefits from... And I'm just going to rename the movie. It's going to benefit from Billion Dollar Black Panther because, I think there was this great movement of stars and people in the community buying out theaters for anyone and everyone to watch Black Panther. And the same thing happened for Wrinkle in Time. And I really enjoy kind of that collective community to get people to watch these films that represent our community, that represent what we see in our world, a diverse cast, a, you know, an inclusive cast. I think that is what's more important about both of these films and about both of these creators doing this and being able to kind of rise above and get people out there and get people to go watch films. And, you know, I got to see Ava DuVernay do a Times talk last week, and just being in the room with her, I felt blessed. Just, I think she blessed me specifically. and she really talked for a little bit over an hour about A Wrinkle in Time and how much it meant to her. There's so much. She really wanted to expand the story of A Wrinkle in Time and explore a little bit of bullying. Really, really funny thing that she said was there is a bully in the grade school that Meg Murray, the main character, goes to. And that bully is a new character. That was kind of how she kind of updated the story. And she said she helped name that character with the screenwriter for her bully in the past and the screenwriter's bully. So I guess she wouldn't say which name was which, but the first name and the last name was a combination of their bullies. And I thought that was really funny, because who wouldn't want to be able to do that, right?
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So I definitely want to see this film. And it sounds like to me that I should definitely try to see this on the large screen, because the thing that you're being most positive about, I think, is how visually it looks, right? So would you, even though I'm not a child, and at this point, I don't really have any children in my life. My nephew is about to turn 14. I think he's officially right. Not a child. So even though I am childless and a grown-ass man, should I still go to the theater to see this movie?
I think yes, because one, I just think we should support Black filmmakers, diverse filmmakers of any kind. So one, yes for that. Two, because of Ava and we love her. Three, because on a big screen, this film was made for a big screen. It's made to be seen with these vast, beautiful landscapes. So I think yes, watch it for that reason. I would say just go into it understanding where Ava came from. Another thing that she mentioned in that Times talk is that she said youth fantasies aren't really made anymore. And if they are, they're not really getting as much recognition. You know, she mentioned the youth fantasies that she loved growing up, like Neverending Story and Escape to Witch Mountain. And she loved those.
I love that movie.
And she was like, I wanted to make that film, but I wanted to see myself in it, because I saw those films and I didn't see a me in it. And, you know, and that was just so wonderful and so kind of just amazing to hear her say, because neither of us did that either. We never saw that.
Yep.
And she's trying not to do that. You know, she's trying to break that, and she's trying to put more diverse characters in these roles.
So you know what? I am going to go see it, because on the big screen, for two reasons. One, I think I've made a vow to myself to see every Andre Holland movie ever made. And I know he has a small role, but I still need to see that face and that talent on the big screen. And then I also want to hear the new Sade song in Dolby surround sound.
Oh, yeah. It's called Flower of the Universe, guys. Sade, they did a great song. It's the first song they've ever put out in 7 years. And kudos to Ava for getting that done. And it's such a beautiful track. You know, it's very quintessential Sade type of sound, but it's just beautiful and has such a atmosphere about it. If you go on Spotify, there's a remix with No ID. And I don't know if you've heard of No ID, Sean, but he's frankly just a rock star producer right now. And he's done songs that you probably knew, like Heartless by Kanye West. He worked with Common. He's done, I think he got a lot of recognition this last year for working on 444. He was credited as the primary producer on that.
Okay.
I really enjoy his remix. It doesn't derive too much away from the original, but his remix just adds this flavor that I really, really enjoy.
Oh, please put that in the show notes, because I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
And I think the listeners want to check that out too.
Yeah,
and thank you for saying they, because some people forget or may not know that Sade is that fantastic, amazing woman. Sade is also the name of the band. So props giving full credit to that band, because it's her voice, but then also the music.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people refer to Sade as her. And I think the reason I came about it, I think, was years ago when they had gotten nominated for a Grammy in the group category.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was probably for Soldier of Love or something. And I was just like, why is that a group? And then I did some research, looked it up, went on her website, their website, my bad. And yeah, and I was just like, oh, good on you, Sade, taking the name, yeah, but really giving the credit to the band. I like that.
I can't think of any other musician or musicians, plural, they are a band, but I can't, who have done what she's done, which is deliver an album. I think in the 80s, you know, it was probably an album every other year for a couple of albums, but she'll take these long breaks of 7 years, yeah, 10 years, 17 years. But people are, and I think it's fine, people never forget her, but it's okay because she's told us at this point, don't think that I'm going to be around all the time. I need to go live my life. But then when I come back, it will be rapturous and worth the wait. And then I'm going to go away again. So don't get attached. And yeah, I think I love that she does that because I feel like we live in an age with pop music where if you don't turn out an album every other year, or at least give us some singles in between major albums, like Beyonce, it's called a comeback if you wait more than 6 months. But I think for Sade, she's trained us, right? Mm-hmm. She's trained us pop culture consumers to be like, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years, and and I'm going to continue to do this. I'm going to, like Haley's Comet, but even less predictable, I will come around when the time is right, and then I'm going to leave again, and I've trained you to accept that.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. And I think, check out Flower of the Universe, guys, and hopefully maybe this means Sade's back in the recording studio. Maybe we can cross our fingers that we are going to get something. There has been some time passed, so maybe mm-hmm. there's something else coming out from Sade this year.
And just quickly, I'm just take it one step back to Ava. Shout out to the way she uses her music in her work. Shout out to whoever she works with as a music supervisor, because from like the music in Queen Sugar is phenomenal. The way was used in Selma was amazing. So shout out to Ava, her sense of music, and the music supervisors and composers she uses.
Yeah, and if I could take one more minute to gush about her and that Times talk, I felt like I just got such an incredible conversation with her about her process. You know, she discussed how she needed Wrinkle in Time because she was orchestrating murders and racism in Selma and 13th, and she needed flowers, and she needed to like put Oprah in a blonde wig, and she needed kind of a little bit of a break from some of the serious, more deeper topics that she worked on. And I love that she was honest and she said, yeah, those things are important to me, but I also want to do the fun stuff. And she credited some directors that she looked to who had a very wide, varied career. And she wanted to look at a female director that had a career that she wanted to kind of emulate. And she didn't have those examples. So she looked to people like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese and Ridley Scott and Denis Villeneuve. When I just like almost freaked out when she said Denis Villeneuve, I was like, oh my God, let's just have like coffee and talk about Denis Villeneuve together. And, but she said that she was very deliberately mimicking those directors so that the next Black, Asian, Filipino, whatever director can ask her how to do it. And I thought that was so inspiring. I love her for saying that. So thank you again, Ava, for that Times talk. Thank you for this film. Thank you for, you know, giving us diversity and representation. And, you know, I'm looking forward to all the 15 other things you'll be doing in the future.
Oh, yeah. More and more and more and more and more. Yeah. And I think she's going to continue giving it to us in diverse medium, right? So it'll be docs, it'll be film, it'll be streaming, it'll mm-hmm. be theater, it'll be cable TV. So just look forward to all of that. You know what I just realized? I know why I'm excited about this, especially excited about this episode. It really does have a female focus that was not intentional, but everything that we have and will talk about for the most part, looking at our rundown, is female focused. So right on.
Right on,
sister.
Speaking of that, your next topic, talk about female focus, the new season of Jessica Jones.
Right on, sisters. This one snuck snuck in. I loved the first season of Jessica Jones and was highly anticipating it, but I think partly because of where like my head has been at in work mostly and not much else. But also like the Black Panther onslaught. And I forgot that Jessica Jones was premiering. And the next thing I knew, I was traveling for work and I was alone in my hotel room. And I was like, oh, I have just enough energy to maybe watch something. And I was like, oh, wait, Jessica Jones. So I'm going to say that Jessica Jones is arguably the best Marvel Netflix offering.
Ooh.
I thought Luke Cage was phenomenal. But I think where Jessica Jones might edge out Luke Cage is that it was a little bit more consistent over its episodes in the first season. Whereas I think Luke Cage began immensely powerful. But then, like again, I'm tired of saying this, but I think if Luke Cage had only been 9 episodes, it would have been perfection. It trailed off a little bit. You know, so did Jessica Jones, but I think it was just more consistent. So it's back for season 2. And like Ava DuVernay's Queen Sugar, every single episode is directed by a woman.
I love that. Thank you, Ava, again. Blazing a path, Ava.
And I'll say, and this is going to be spoiler free, so I'm just going to say that I did consider big selling the first episode of season 2 to you, because I'm very curious to see how you would react to the show. And actually there's this really nice recap of season 1 that plays at the beginning of season 2, which I think is a very smart move. It's about 90 seconds long. But anyway, I think you should, if you ever have time for it, you should just start with season 1. I'll say that for season 2, I'm enjoying it. I feel like they're even attaching harder to the idea that this is a noir detective story first, and then her superpower second. But there's definitely, I mean, I can't think of a better show to premiere during the Time's Up Me Too movement, because it is about this woman who has superpowers but has a lot of trouble. She drinks too much. She's trying to drown out the pain from this experience in season 1, where she was essentially, I'm trying to think of the right word, assaulted both sexually and emotionally by this other superpowered being. And I mean, and so what season 2 does is it doesn't shy away from the fact that even though she may have survived that, she's still dealing with the aftermath of that. So for a show that's about superpowers, it's very realistic. And I just watched the first episode, a little depressing, a little heavy, but I'm going to keep at it. So I think it's really well done. I think Kristen Ritter's an amazing actor. I love the mix of detective noir and superheroism. So far, thumbs up. And I'd love to hear what listeners think about Jessica Jones. And I'd love to hear if you are ever going to think about checking out season 1.
You know what? Honestly, after seeing all of the hype, you know, promoting season 2, and because I'm all about female power and the fact that it's all female directors, I'm really, really excited to kind of support that. So I would maybe try to watch season 1. I'm going to try.
I love that committed answer. I will kind of, sort of, maybe think about possibly.
Kind of, sort of, maybe. I don't know. Listen, people, I've got some time on my hands right now. So maybe I will. And I feel like I so want to make a deal with you right now, but you're going to hate it.
I know what your deal is. Amita has been trying to get me to watch This Is Us,
yes,
which I'm not a hater. Like, I definitely want to watch and love the show. I just, as every week goes by, I'm overwhelmed with the number of episodes I would need to watch. But I do want to do this.
You can do it. I believe in you. And I will watch Jessica Jones if you watch This Is Us. I'm going to put the deal out there now.
All right. You're speaking to someone, though, who hasn't even finished watching Twin Peaks, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. So
you've got some work to do.
It's the struggle is real.
It is so real in Sean Johnson's world right now. Y'all don't even know. Okay.
I'm shirking my duties as a pop culture co-host. But yeah, so I can't wait to, I look forward to maybe this weekend where I can dive in and watch like two or three episodes in a row. That would be a pleasure. And I need to talk to my nephew, who is a pretty hard, you know, he's a pretty good critic when it comes to all these Marvel shows. So I want to hear what he has to say about them, and maybe I'll report back on that. So, but yeah, thumbs up to season two of Jessica Jones. We know how hard season two could be. So I think it's up, it's off to a good start.
Awesome. I can't wait to maybe try possibly look into that. All right. We will have more after this very short message.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're the hosts of Everything's Coming Up Simpsons. We are a Simpsons podcast brand new to the Maximum Fun Network, and every episode we cover a different episode of The Simpsons that is a favorite of our special guests.
We've had guests that are showrunners and writers and voice actors like Nancy Cartwright, all people that have worked on The Simpsons, and we've also had guests like Weird Al and people that are on the Max Fun Network already, and each week we will talk to a very cool guest about their favorite episode, and it is so much fun. So if you like The Simpsons, come listen to Everything's Coming Up Simpsons.
All right, smell you later.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
We're continuing our female focused episode with a look at the new offering from Michelle Ndegeocello. She put out a covers album, which is actually coming out this Friday, March 16th. It's called Ventriloquism, and it's a collection of these beautiful 80s and 90s covers. A lot of songs that you have probably heard of. Probably one of the most popular songs that she covered is TLC's Waterfalls. Mm-hmm. She did Tender Love, Sensitivity, Night and Day by Albie Shore, Private Dancer. This was such a gift. What did you think of it?
I'm just going to also say, I'm really curious to hear what our friends Jojcast is going to think of this album, because they love and know so much about music. I think they appreciate, I don't know how they feel about Michelle Ndegeocello, but I know they appreciate 90s music. And we had a long conversation back and forth with them about covers. We had a nice little Twitter back and forth when we did our favorite covers discussion. So I want to hear what they have to say. So Jojcast, if you're listening, please let us know. I loved it. I've loved Michelle Ndegeocello since her first album. It's called Peace Beyond Passion. And from that album, which came out, I think, in 96, 20 years ago, I've loved her. I love her deep voice and her amazing bass playing. And I love the respect. You know, there are people like Michelle Ndegeocello and Questlove more than anyone else, and a number of artists who are always about acknowledging people, musicians who've come before. And the way she's doing it with this covers album is incredible. There, it's, you know, because covers can sometimes be, let me sound just like them, or let me try to sound so hard not like them, or let me do a campy version. But I think it's all about respect and creativity. Like her cover of Tender Love is amazing.
I love that. That's one of my favorites on this album.
Yeah. And I read an interview where she said that she was listening to a lot of Neil Young at the time of recording that song. So she kind of takes this. The original is not, it's not New Jack Swing, is it? How would you describe it? But it's very 90s.
Yeah, I think it's like 80s, like late 80s, early 90s. And it's not New Jack Swing. It's just,
Right, it's not New Jack Swing.
I just think it's a little bit more maybe synth R&B, maybe?
Yeah, so slick and sweet. But she turns that into this kind of Neil Young sounding song, and it works.
It so works. It has this really incredible soul to it, but this folk vibe. It's so, so great. I immediately gravitated to this one. The Waterfalls cover is really, really great, guys. I mean,
beautiful.
She brings this new somberness to the song that was already kind of like a little bit more of a message song, but it made it kind of acoustic, still had that R&B vibe to it, but what an incredible cover of Waterfalls. And you actually kind of clued me into these covers coming out when you sent me Sometimes It Snows in April a couple months ago.
Yes, I did.
Please, because if anybody's going to do a Prince cover, you need to talk about it.
Oh, my gosh. So Sometimes It Snows in April is Listen, if you were going to rank all of Prince's ballads, I'm going to say it. Purple Rain is not number one. I'm actually putting, for me, Sometimes It Snows in April, then The Beautiful Ones, then Purple Rain. Those three, it doesn't get better than those three ballads. For me, Sometimes It Snows in April is at the tippy top. And then when you look at it in light of the fact that he passed away in April, and the song is about the death of a character he plays in Under the Cherry Moon, not a good film, don't watch it. But it's just so, it's even more impactful and meaningful and sad. And so I've heard three versions that have changed my life. The first one is when D'Angelo and Maya Rudolph's group Princess performed it on Jimmy Fallon. Yes. Remember that? Just days after Prince passed away.
You're going to make me
gorgeous.
Cry.
The second one is when you and I saw The Revolution live and Wendy and Lisa performed an acoustic version of
that
this.
That made me cry.
My life was changed again.
Oh, God. How did you feel about that? It was, I think I said this on the podcast when we discussed it, like you could hear a pin drop in the room. They discussed how it snowed that day in April when they found out Prince had died, and then they mm-hmm. sang the song, and like, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. I really don't. It was so poignant and beautiful and had so much different levels to it when they sang it. And I think we saw them at the end of April. We did. It was just like there was so many feelings. Yeah.
And now this third one, this third recorded version of Michele Ondaatje-Oceello giving you her interpretation is just gorgeous and mournful. And I'm reading into it, but to me, it sounds like a letter of, that she's written to Prince. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. It's powerful. And I can't listen to it all the time. I have to be ready to listen to the song. I can't be on the subway and listen to it. I need to just be in my own space because it just does make me really sad. Thank you, Michele. You know what? And just like another shout out, she did this other album that was all covers of Nina Simone songs. It's amazing. So if you guys are intrigued by what we're talking about with this album, listen to it. And then check out her Nina Simone covers album, which is amazing. She's got their guest appearances by Valerie June and a couple of other people who I really like. I can't think of them now, but definitely check out both of those. I'll put links in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely do that. I definitely want to check that out. I just want to give a round of applause to her for this. This was such a wonderful treat. It's earthy, but it has light moments. It's sultry. I love her voice. And I think like you had said about covers, it just gives songs that I already enjoyed a new life. And not every cover can do that. You know, sometimes a cover is just, I'm just going to sing this song like I would sing this song, and that's it. And then you forget about it. I feel like they give them a new life and it feels like you'll remember them and hold them as new songs in their own right.
You know what? When we do our live show and open it up with our cover of Superpower by Beyoncé and Frank Ocean, we're going to do the same thing. So get ready.
Yes. Oh, you're so stuck on that idea, aren't you?
I am really stuck. Trust me, I've been in my living room kind of blocking out some of the choreography.
Oh my gosh,
it's going to be great.
We can choreograph that song. Okay.
I can.
Yes, you can. Oh my goodness. So,
my cat stood in for you, by the way. So
thank you.
Yeah, we worked
thank
it out.
Thank you. It's an appropriate stand-in.
Yeah.
we still have a little bit more music to talk about, but in this case, somebody here went to Broadway and saw a musical.
You know, I'm fancy like that.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, we've talked about Broadway a couple of times. We saw Andre Holland on mm-hmm. Broadway. We've both seen that amazing August Wilson play, Jitney. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Hamilton separately. I went to see Carousel. Friend of the show, Zara Finley-Shuras, had an extra ticket, so I joined her. And I primarily went for two reasons. One, because I am a kind of big musical nerd, and I do love Rodgers and Hammerstein, The King and I, South Pacific. And so this was Carousel, a revival of the musical Carousel. I was also super excited because Joshua Henry, who took over the role of Aaron Burr from Leslie Odom Jr. and then originated the role, I think, both in Chicago and on the West Coast, he starred in it. So it was just definitely on my list of things I had to see. Joshua Henry, I'm going to put a link to his Instagram in our show notes because he does this amazing thing where he'll do soulful acoustic versions of Hamilton songs. Ooh. And they're gorgeous. And speaking of good covers, I mean, so it's songs mm-hmm. that you love, and then you love them in a different way, like a soulful version of Skylar Sisters or You'll Be Back. So that'll be in the show notes. So the musical is great, but I mean, I'm just going to tell you, it's a very, very, very weird musical because it came out in the 50s, I guess. And a main plot line is about Joshua Henry's character
Ooh.
Beats his wife. And like, that's a main plot. And it's very strange seeing this production in 2018, especially during Me Too and Time's Up, and just increased awareness. That is a plot. And characters are like, oh yeah, you really shouldn't beat her. But it's like, it's not a deal breaker. So it's hard to watch something that is so politically incorrect. And I could tell the director's like trying to make it more of a big deal than what actually exists in the book and lyrics. But so that was problematic, shall we use that word? But, you know, I think you've got to, I don't want to dissuade people from going to see it because the performances and the dancing is incredible. You just have to deal with that huge, huge, huge problem of something from the 50s playing in 2018.
All right. That is so interesting. I did not know that about this. I've heard about this show in just over the years as being just one of those really well-known musicals that if you're really into Broadway or if you're on Broadway, Carousel is just this incredible mm-hmm. show. And there's, I think the song that I think there's always like, if it's not a very, very popular show, there's maybe a few songs from a very popular show that everybody knows, is You'll Never Walk Alone is the song that I think people know from this, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah, definitely, definitely. And there were a couple of songs that, because I didn't really know the musical very well at all, and there were a couple of songs that were sung, and I was like, oh, I know that song. I didn't say it out loud, I just said it to myself.
Good, that's good.
But yeah, so it's tricky. I mean, I feel like I think of the biggest example I think of is Breakfast at Tiffany's. Mickey Rooney plays this horrific caricature mm-hmm. of a Japanese person, like just insulting and disgusting. So, but I feel like there are times where you have to, you want to enjoy the artistry of something from the fit, you know, from before mm-hmm. people knew better, or they knew better, but they decided not to act on it. So that's tricky. I mean, it's, I think it's an interesting thing to talk about. Maybe that's a segment in the future. But I give it a thumbs up. If you're visiting New York or if you're a New Yorker, definitely try to check out Carousel. It's a mate. Renee Fleming is one of the great singers in the world. I think she's in it. Joshua Henry. So I would definitely recommend it. Check it out and just be prepared to grapple with some weird stuff.
Okay. No, it's good. No, I appreciate your honesty about it, and I think that's good to know going into it, and I definitely will try to see if I can snag some lottery tickets or some last-minute tickets to the show.
You like to be fancy.
I do try.
On Broadway.
I try. All right, well, we will be back with the Big Sell after this short message.
Hey, my name's Jonah Ray. You might have seen me on the latest season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 or heard me on the Nerdist podcast. Well, I got a new podcast that's about 5 years old, but we're moving it over to Max Fun, along with my friend Cash Hartzell.
Hey, everybody.
And my other friend, Neil.
Hi.
Nailed it!
So, it's a music podcast where a lot of people just kind of hang out and talk about music, but so much more. We also take submissions, and so you can hear your band or our music...
Or both.
Or both of it.
You could listen to your band play your music.
Yeah. So tune in, why don't you? You could find out about some new bands and maybe just hear us embarrass ourselves as we drink too much.
Not too much.
Well, it's all perspective, isn't it?
Sure is.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for the slumbering, hiatus-taking. I don't have time for you right now, maybe next week, saying the big sell.
What is the big sell, Sean? How would you describe it?
Well, you know what? In the theme of this show, I would describe the big sell as a maternal figure in our lives, right? We listen to our mothers. We take their advice. We heed their recommendations. And then we also learn to communicate back with our mothers. And so just like that relationship that you have with your mother, so is your relationship with the big cell.
Every week, guys, every week, another incredible description of the big cell from Sean Johnson. If you're not listening to this podcast for anything else, just listen for that. I love it.
Yeah, it's hanging by a string, hanging by a string. So, of course, it's also about Amit and I recommending stuff from pop culture we love and then recommending it to the other because we're both open-minded and open-hearted, and we like to share things with each other.
Like last week. Well, when I say last week, I mean last month when I sold Sean an album called Mr. Finish Line from a group called Wolfpack. Sean, what did you think of this album?
And yes, it took me a month to get back to you on this because I really wanted to give this album the attention it deserved. Here's what I have to say about Wolfpack. When you recommended it to me and I did listen to it from start to finish, listen, I did a little research. I was like, oh, let me see who Wolfpack is. And so listen, I saw that it was some white hipsters doing soul music. I will say that my first emotion was skepticism, if that's an emotion. You know, because that's who I am, I have to admit. Mm-hmm. I have to share my truth, which is sometimes I'm skeptical and judgmental. But what I will say is that listening to it, I feel like I can hear this is the sincerity of their love of soul music, their skill in interpreting soul music and maybe making it their own a little bit. And so I'm not going to hate on the fact that like some white hipsters really do love soul music and want to bring it their own way. And so I really, I got out of my way.
Good.
And I really enjoyed the album. I thought it was really well done. I did a little research, and the one thing that I'd like to share for people who also want to check this out is one of their goals is to make it soul music with a very minimal sound and to not have any instrument overpower the other one, just to have very sparse instrumentation. Ooh. Where all the instruments are equally important, and I can hear that. So I really enjoyed it. I love the instrumentals. I love the vocals. I love how they actually have guest stars on songs. So it sounds to me like an old school soul review where you would just see the main band and then like they'd have a guest star who'd sing a song and then they get off stage and then someone else comes on and then they have a musical instrumental. So I really enjoyed the experience of listening to this album, and I'm going to listen to it again.
Okay, this is... First of all, I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. I thought it was a little bit of a risk. I did when I was selling this to you, but I had given you a couple of layups in the past, so I had to go hard on this one. And I knew that you might be a little bit skeptical about these white hipsters doing soul music, and I was a little nervous. I was like, oh, he's gonna be like, what is this? But I am so, so glad that you appreciate their sound. I hope that you dive into some of their older albums as well. I just, you know, for those of you who don't know Wolfpack, check them out. They're on Spotify. Some really fun tracks that they do, like Business Casual and Birds of a Feather. Like I said, when I sold this to you, it's got like this really great upbeat, get you a bounce in your step kind of feeling. And then, you know, but then they also have a song like Grandma, which totally touched me. And I was wondering if that song meant anything to you, because I just feel like it came after some songs that felt a little more mid-tempo upbeat. And then this beautiful track called mm-hmm. Grandma, which was, I think, a tribute to somebody's grandma, which I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, I really did love that song. Aww. I love tribute songs to let's keep it going with the women. To, like, tribute songs yeah. to mothers. Like, one of my favorite songs is, I will always love my mama. She's my favorite girl. All right, I'm putting that in the show notes.
Yes.
But it's this tribute song to this guy's mother. And, I mean, there are a lot of them. I Dance with My Father by Luther Vandross. And
yeah.
So I do love that song. I'm going to put that song in the good company of those other songs I just mentioned.
Oh,
so
good.
I do love that. Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So ratings time, shall I give it a 3.25 stars?
You shall, and I will take it. Thank you, Sean.
And thank you for sharing, Wolfpack.
What do you have for me this week, sir?
I'm taking a chance.
Oh, that's
just the
what
way
we
you
like.
Did. Let's see if it pays off.
Okay.
You may like this, you may not, but here, let's do it. So, one, you know, as I've been talking about, I haven't had a chance to watch This Is Us or pretty much anything else. But one thing I did have a chance to do is listen to a new podcast.
All right.
We are a podcast. I figured, why not shout out another podcast?
Let's do it.
So there is a new podcast that's received a lot of promotion because it's not like a little independent, let's put on a show podcast like ours.
Uh-huh.
But it's like there's a lot of money and big budgets behind this. But it's a scripted podcast.
Ooh.
About Wolverine from X-Men.
I was just reading about this podcast.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. They had an event at South by Southwest that I've been getting a lot of notifications about. So I'm curious. And I was wondering what you might have thought about it because I know you're a fan.
Well, you're about to hear it. So it's it's called Wolverine the Long Night. And it's amazing. Mm. Okay, so one can listen to it on Stitcher Premium, and the good thing is you can log on using the code MARVEL, and you can get Stitcher Premium for free for a month. And that's what I would like you to do, Amita, just to listen okay. to the first episode. And things that I would love for you to listen for are the incredible sound design. Listen with some good headphones, okay. not just earbuds, and just the rain and footsteps and atmosphere that they created. And then the actors are legit. There are some amazing actors in this acting, right? And I think voice acting is very different from
yeah
any other type of acting. Bob Balaban's in it. Scott Adsit from 30 Rock. Some major actors, some people I've never heard of before. And it's just good. Like it feels like a detective story, kind of like Jessica Jones felt like a detective story, and also superheroes. So I've only listened to the first episode. I am super excited to hear what you have to say about it. Wolverine the Long Night, a new podcast.
All right. I will check it out for sure. Thank you. Thanks. I'm curious about it. I am, because I think it's a new arm in the Marvel universe to get into podcasts. And I've just, like I said, I've been hearing a lot about it. So thank you for that big sell.
You are welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. The female fan party that we have been having ends, and we will have another episode next week, don't you worry. But please stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders, and head over to Facebook, Inside Pop, and new exclamation point, we are now on Spotify, people.
We are. Oh my god,
we talk about Spotify every gosh darn week, and now we are on it. So please find us on Spotify. Listen to us there. It's even easier to listen to us now. And if you'd like to check out our show notes that we keep mentioning all these really cool things that we're putting in them, go over to InsidePopPodcast.com and also find out more about us and subscribe. That's really important. Please subscribe to this podcast.
Yo, that's breaking news. I didn't know we were on Spotify. Thank you for sharing that information with me. Right on. Okay, so one other place you can find us is on MaximumFun.org. That is a podcast network that we are delighted to be a part of. In the next few weeks, there's going to be a big fundraising drive, which is actually a good thing, not something that you need to run away from, because you'll get to hear a lot more about that amazing network and all those super cool podcasts like ours that are on the network. So MaximumFun.org. We're there alongside a lot of other great comedy and culture podcasts. There's stuff happening in our future, like next week, for example. We're going to talk about Atlanta.
Oh, guys, Atlanta's back, y'all. Donald Glover is bringing it again. Emmy winner Donald Glover. Excuse me. So we'll talk about the first few episodes of Atlanta, of course.
and a lot more of TV, music, probably not Broadway. No one's got time for that this week.
No.
But
I don't, sadly.
Until then, please have an amazing week.
Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.